Our New Testament scripture reading comes from the Gospel according to John, John 13, verses 1 through 17. Hear the word of the Lord. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from the supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
The last chapter, chapter 12, was about the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. When Jesus entered Jerusalem as a prophet said he would, and there was this great throng of people hailing him as Messiah. And the 12th chapter started with that and then spoke about some conversations that took place immediately after that. We come to chapter 13 and you just think, well, it's continuing. But really, what happens with the first verse, and we're going to see this in a minute. I'll take some time to talk about it, and we'll take some time to think about it. That a new section, a subsection in the Gospel of John begins with chapter 13. It runs through chapter 17. Those chapters contain just profound, profound teaching by Jesus. And we're going to begin to look at those chapters this morning as we look at the first 17 verses of John 13. When and why did the Son of God and the Son of Man wash dirty feet? If you want to understand, if you're saying, "I want to understand the Gospel of John," you must put the 13th chapter in context. In fact, you must put chapters 13 through 17 in context. They belong together. John's Gospel is not easy to outline. Of all the Gospels, it's the hardest Gospel town line. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are more focused on the Galilean ministry of Jesus. And there's a certain chronology that you see in those Gospels. John, his gospel centers more on his Judean, Jesus' Judean ministry in and around Jerusalem. And John easily moves without that chronology from one event to another. And those events may be 6 months apart. They may be 1 week apart. For instance, by the time you get to chapters 11 and 12, chapters 11 and 12 were dedicated to the death and resurrection of Lazarus. Two whole chapters. By that time, you've gone through 10 chapters. And he's already to the last 3 and 4 weeks before Jesus is crucified. Chapter 12 begins the last week of his life before the cross. By 13, you've moved from the beginning of the week to the night before his crucifixion. Chapter 13 begins with that Passover dinner. We're all familiar with that. Those chapters, chapters 13 through 17, are best described as Jesus' caring ministry to his disciples just before the crucifixion. So we move from the scenes in chapter 12 that took place in the hours or days after his dramatic entry. We move into Jerusalem to the Passover supper the evening before he was crucified. So this morning, question. What's the usual focus of any message about what happened that evening in the upper room at the Passover supper? What is the major subject? In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the focus is on Jesus instituting the Lord's Supper. You know that. And well, it should be the emphasis. But notice, John says nothing about Jesus instituting the Lord's Supper. Why? We've said this over and over again in our study. There's a reason for it. The other three Gospels had already been written. They had already been distributed throughout the churches across the Mediterranean. John knew most readers would have already known about the bread and wine representing the body and blood of Christ. They already knew that there was a new Passover meal. But John begins his record of that supper by relating an astonishing event. Like nothing we have seen in the Gospels up until now. He tells how Jesus got up from the supper and began to wash the dirty feet of the disciples. Look at how John introduced this new section of his gospel. Look at the first verse of chapter 13. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. What a powerful, powerful verse. That's how John begins this record. Jesus had taught the disciples. He had cared for the disciples. He had loved the disciples for 3 years. But John marks it here. He said he would teach, care for, and love the disciples to the very end. That's how he begins this subject. He says, that is what is happening. That will describe everything Jesus says and does in chapters 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. John was there. He was an eye and ear witness to everything Jesus said and did with the disciples through chapter 17. He was teaching us to the end, John says. He was caring for us to the end. He was loving us to the end. Only the disciples were there. If Jesus thought it was important enough to stop in that evening and give this discourse, do these things and say these things with the disciples, is it not paramount that we see them and we understand them, that we get them? It's important for us to know how John regarded what he was relating in chapters 13 through 17. Those chapters have been called the Upper Room Discourse. That's a good title for them. It was a last intensive training session. The last words of Jesus before the cross privately to the disciples. Having seen the context then of chapters 13 through 17, let's look at the first event John records in this long evening. I want you to see in this passage first, in this story that he tells, we must know, if you want to understand this, you must know who was washing the dirty feet of the disciples. Look at verse 12. When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord. You are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." In the culture of that day, washing one's feet when entering a house was a common, everyday custom. People walked in sandals. People walked on their bare feet. Feet got dirty. A bowl and towel were kept near the entrance of any dwelling to facilitate this routine. A bowl and a towel, you would have seen it everywhere. When a dinner party was taking place, the host would provide a servant. I thought about this, all the parties we go to here in Memphis. Have you ever gone in and had your feet washed? We don't do that. This was a custom then. When such a party took place, the person washing the feet would usually be the lowest servant of the house, the newest servant, the one at the end of the pecking order. So we read in our passage this morning that there was a bowl and towel there in the upper room. But this was a barred room. No servant had been assigned to their party. So Jesus, at some point, rose from his place, took off his outer garment, took the bowl and the towel, and began to wash the disciples' feet. This was astonishing. Far more than astonishing. Who was washing their feet? You want to get a good view of that? Turn to Revelation 5. Look at it on your scripture sheet. Revelation 5, 8 through 10. "And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song. Worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain. And by your blood, you ransomed people for God from every tribe, language, and people and nation. And you have made them to be a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth. What a scene. All of heaven, as the Son of God and the Son of Man returned to glory and took that scroll from the one on the throne, the scroll of ownership to all of heaven and all of earth. All of heaven broke out in praise. We've never heard anything like it, anything close to it. You're worthy. Folks, this is who washed the disciples' feet. That person, the Lamb, the Lion of Judah, the eternal Son of God. This is a point Jesus himself made. Look at verse 12 in John 13. Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher. You call me Lord. And it goes on. And you are right, for so I am. That's who I am. And I just kneel before you, your creator, maker, and redeemer, and washed your feet. He himself was saying, who washed your feet? I did. And you not only call me Rabbi, you call me Lord. I'm the Son of God and Son of Man, the Messiah. So if I did this, how can you not do it? How can you refuse to do it? Peter understood who was on his knees washing their feet. Look at verse 8. Peter said to him, you shall never wash my feet. I know who you are. The Messiah does not wash feet. The Son of God does not wash the dirty feet, even of his followers. Peter was saying, I confess you to be Messiah, the Son of the living God. I'll not let you wash my feet. It's all right for the lowest servant in the house to wash my feet, but you're the very Son of God. Jesus was saying, that is the reason I did it. You're to follow me. You're to be like me. For the rest of your lives, you will say to people, this Jesus, this Son of God, who right now is reigning in glory, one evening he washed my dirty feet. Now, you may be saying, well, the disciples could say that. I wish I could say that, but I can't. He didn't wash my feet. That's what you're saying. You will never be able to say he washed our feet. But we can say something far more powerful. We said it this morning. You said it this morning. All of us said it this morning. Look at that call to worship. Who being in the very nature God did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. It doesn't say there. He humbled himself to wash the disciples' feet because washing the disciples' feet was pale compared to Calvary. That's why they shouted in heaven. When he took that scroll, they didn't talk about him washing the feet. It was something of greater humiliation. He went to a Roman cross and he took your sin and my sin. He took our guilt. He took our punishment. Oh. We misunderstand who was washing the dirty feet of the disciples. And he was the same one that was on that cross in our place. He's done far more than wash our feet, friends. Secondly, we must understand the catalyst that compelled Jesus to wash their feet. When Jesus is sitting there and saying, all right, I've got this script now. It's time to get up and wash your feet. No. Look at verse 2. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. John says that Jesus knew that Judas had planned to betray him. In Luke's record of this Passover evening, Jesus told all the disciples, now I want you to put yourself in that room right now. It will help you understand this. You're in that room. You're one of the 12. You've been with Jesus 3 years. This is a close-knit group. And Jesus looks at this group over an intimate setting, over a supper, and says, one of you will betray me. What happened then? Well, Luke tells us. Look at Luke 22, 23. And they began to question one another which of them it could be who was doing this. I mean, they said, what? One of us going to deny you? Well, what happened then? Luke tells us. A dispute arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. And now Jesus is sitting here, listen to this. He's going to be crucified the next day. And he's sitting here listening to this motley crew saying, well, this is who I am, and I know I'm going to sit on his right. They're still thinking Jesus is going to the palace and begin to reign. They don't know he's going to a cross. A dispute broke out in the upper room. And what did Jesus say? And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest and the leader as one who serves. I believe it was right at that point, that Jesus rose, took off his garments, and took the bowl and the towel, the unused bowl and towel. It had been there the whole evening. They knew that bowl and towel were there. They knew their feet were dirty. But it was unused. And he began to wash their feet. Jesus was saying, you are arguing about which of you is greatest in my kingdom? Really? Well, let me show you what the greatest in my kingdom does. We must understand who was washing the dirty feet of the disciples. We must understand the catalyst that compelled Jesus to wash their dirty feet. He had said, one of you going to betray me? And they were all saying, I could never do anything like that. Well, thirdly, we must understand what Jesus intended to accomplish in this astonishing demonstration. Look at verse 12. When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments, resumed his place, he said to them, do you understand what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. If the King of heaven and earth does this, Peter, John, and James, I'm doing this so that you will understand what you must do. This is not about your dirty feet. This is not about reminding you to wash your feet when you come inside. That's not what Jesus was doing. This is about you looking out for each other. This is not about lording it over each of you and telling someone how great you are and what power you have. Jesus was doing what he always did. He was teaching his disciples. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. This is not about going out and finding some beggar and washing his feet. It's one another. One another's feet. In this event, Jesus was teaching his disciples about the absolute necessity of humility, not just between all the members of the church, but especially between the church leadership. These were the men, these 12 men, 11 of them, would lead the church of Jesus Christ in Jerusalem after the resurrection, after Pentecost. These would be the men. Their names would become known all over the world. He was saying, Peter, you watched me wash John's feet. You watched me wash Matthew, the former tax collector. You watched me wash his feet. Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you do that? Believe me, at that point, every disciple in that room was thinking, man, did I ever mess up? I would really be first in the kingdom if I'd have just gotten up and washed everybody's feet. We must understand who was washing the dirty feet of the disciples. We must understand the catalyst that compelled Jesus to wash their dirty feet. We must understand what Jesus intended to accomplish in this astonishing demonstration. And finally, we must understand that he was communicating something far deeper than how to act like a lowly servant. Go back to Philippians 2, what we read in our call to worship. What did he say? I'm going to read it to you again just to get it set. Who being in the very nature God did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even on the cross. All right, stop. Don't look down. How did Paul begin that paragraph? What were the words immediately before, who being in the very nature God? You know what those words were? You know what they were? I'm waiting. Your attitude should be the same as Christ Jesus. Your attitude. It's not about being appointed president. It's not about being appointed CEO. It's not about any position. It's about attitude. This is not just an act that you carry out once a month. Well, I need to go wash my brother's feet. No, it's an attitude. The act of washing someone's feet takes place in a few minutes. Jesus was saying, this is an attitude that dwells in you every hour of every day. They had seen this attitude in Jesus every day for 3 years. We must be very clear. This is not about a social or vocational position. It's not about a political position. It's about what's on the inside. It's about our attitude. Paul did not say, let this position be yours. Let this attitude be in you. You know, you can be a servant. You can be a house cleaning servant that cleans houses, like Della, the lady that I talked about a few weeks ago. You can have that position and still be an arrogant jerk. You really can be. We've seen people like that. You can be CEO of a Ford Motor Company or a Fortune 500 company and still be a servant. It's not the position. I lived with this sermon all week long. And it's hard. And I hope you think it's hard. Because if you're not thinking, hey, this is hard, then you just don't understand. When I got to this point in the message, I thought about something that I had heard or read years ago. It was about a man named Samuel Logan Bringle. In 1878, William Booth's great ministry in England had been named, took on the name, the Salvation Army. Maybe you don't know this, but men from all over the world flocked to England to join the Salvation Army, to become a part of that army, to enlist. Samuel Logan Bringle came from the United States. He was a Methodist minister who, even though he was young, had already distinguished himself. Nonetheless, he crossed the Atlantic and joined the Salvation Army, even living in their local barracks for training. Booth was fearful. William Booth was fearful of Bringle because he was a seminary graduate. He was an established minister with promise. He was afraid that Bringle would not be able to submit to the discipline of the Salvation Army. And that's what he told Bringle. He said, "You've been your own boss for too long to really understand the humble ministry of the Salvation Army." So you know what Booth did? Booth gave Bringle, who was living in these barracks with other trainees, his first duty. And Bringle's first duty as a Methodist minister, as a college and seminary graduate, Booth assigned him to clean the boots of the other trainees. Bringle didn't like this duty. He was questioning his decision. He actually wrote, "Have I followed my own fancy across the Atlantic in order to clean dirty shoes?" But the Lord answered Bringle by giving him a vision of Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. And Bringle got the message. And he told the Lord, "If you wash their feet, I shall black their boots." Bringle went on to become the Salvation Army's first American-born commissioner. But go back to Booth for a minute. Why did Booth do what he did? Why did he do it? He did it because of what Jesus did in that upper room. Booth was saying the same thing Jesus was saying in the upper room. If you want to lead in the Salvation Army, you must learn to clean the feet of those around you. I pray that John Sartell understands. This is one of the last lessons Jesus taught his disciples before the crucifixion. I want to learn it. I hope Christ's Covenant Church wants to learn it. Amen.